This is CliffCentral.com.
This is the leadership platform, or rather leadership transformation platform, for 3 hours. The first half hour we had a master lesson conversation around turning around a business with José dos Santos, CEO of CelC. With me, Louis Groenewald, and Richard Angus has just joined us. Hi, Richard.
How's it, Adrian? How are you doing?
Good, good. And of course, Richard will be helping facilitate the business masterclass the next hour. Just say your career, as you say, it's interesting that South Africa is small. A lot of people stem from either MTN or Vodacom. You had a career with Vodacom and worked very closely with people like Alan Ott Craig, the icons of this industry. Just tell us how that happened. And then eventually he called you and said, I'm going to do something different now. I'm going back into the industry after doing the boring chairman or non-executive director thing for 3 years. I didn't think he'd last. But give us a bit of background of your career.
Oh, how far back do you want me to go?
You were at Vodacom how long, and were you always there? Did you do before that?
So I started with a company many people don't know. It was called Stan Telephones and Cables. It was owned by Altec, which was a division of Altron with Bill Fenter. So I started my apprenticeship there many years ago. And then in 1993, when we started talking about GSM and this country was going to launch and give away award two licenses. If you recall, going back to 1993, we had MTN and Vodacom, and under there we had 21 service providers.
Okay.
And you could only buy if you went to a service provider, if you recall that. So I was working with Altron and Bill Fenter and his sons. We started Autopage Cellular. Remember, they owned Autopage Paging.
Yep.
You used to have pages in those days, everybody. So it was a perfect fit at the time. So we started a new company called Autopage Cellular. And I sort of went through the ranks and I became the chief executive there and then left on. Started, what a lot of people don't realize, I was part of the founding group in 2001 with CelC. So I was the managing director of CelC in 2001.
Okay.
I was only there for 2 years. I had a serious difference of opinion on where this company was going. And I left, and I knew Alan, of course, because when I was at Autopage, we dealt with him with Vodacom and MTN. And he sort of phoned me up. He says, so now what? I said, oh, thank God I'm going on a sabbatical. He says, no, you're not. He says, can you go and fix Tanzania up for me? So I went to Tanzania for a year, got that on track, and I was actually loving it, being in a different country, different culture. It was totally different. I mean, the language, the general culture of how do you take a new product to market, and it taught me so many things. And by the way of my having a surname Dos Santos, he thought that I could speak Portuguese fluently and read and write. And I had just presented the final year-end results for Vodacom Tanzania. And he says, well, we made a little bit of a mess up in Vodacom Mozambique. It's been there 2 years and it's done nothing. You speak the language, you go there. I said, listen, man, just because I have a name called Dos Santos doesn't mean I speak the language. I arrived in this country when I was very young. And, for those who knew Alan, you didn't really debate. And 3 weeks later, I was sitting in Maputo with this company that hadn't really done much in 2 years. And that was an amazing, life-changing career for me in terms of what I learned from its people. That's where I really looked at the Empowerment of Women program and how we started really empowering women in that organization. And then sort of fast forward in 2011, I get a phone call from Alan. He's in retirement. He says he's bored. What can I tell him about CelC? And he says, well, we got an opportunity to go back and turn this thing around. And that's sort of how it happened. I left Vodacom Mozambique. My contract had come to an end. And Alan and I came, and took over CelC in 2012. And, you heard the rest earlier on.
Everyone knew that would change the industry somehow. I mean, that Alan was going to come in and yourself and challenge things because you built the industry. Yeah. And I think you said to me, we saw the growth of Vodacom incredibly. I mean, it's ridiculous, the money that was printed and also MTN. But you guys made lots of mistakes. Obviously, when things go really well, you don't see the mistakes. So you've learned through big mistakes and huge successes over the years.
And building businesses with low budgets, Tanzania, Mozambique, it was a huge learning curve. But coming back to South Africa, we are a regulated industry. So the biggest challenge was to get the regulator to create a level playing field. Because for 20 years, they didn't really have to bother. You had Vodacom and MTN, and they did pretty much what they wanted to do. Mm. And Telkom was a big shareholder in Vodacom, 50%, so they didn't really care. So the regulator had a soft-touch approach. When we come back on board in CelC, we said, look, we want to change the status quo. We said, but the regulation is not right, so you have to create that level playing field. If you recall, all the legal cases that were taking place to get the regulator really to create that level playing field so that we could offer the consumer true value.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah, it's a fascinating industry, Richard. I mean, you were in the banking industry concurrent to this growth.
I was going to say, I know the feeling of regulation and the controls and the issues that just don't seem to make sense at a point in time, and the things that you've got to deal with.
We just started this roadshow to raise our own funds to buy our shares, and I get asked by financial institutions, so how do you view your competitor? I said, what, regulating government? They say Vodacom and MTN. I said,
they're
not my competitor at all. I said, the regulatory environment is my competitor. Yeah, you know, we've got to create policymakers to create, you know, a framework that people can compete freely and create an environment of openness. And
I think the other challenge that you've got, obviously, in your world is the world is moving so quickly from an innovation perspective that your ability to move the regulatory framework just doesn't.
Absolutely.
Let's just say it doesn't.
Yeah.
So you've got innovative solutions and ways to deal with issues, and yet here you have the regulator that's kind of, let's call it, three versions behind in terms of how the world is. I mean, I heard you talking earlier and saying, you know, let's do calls via Wi-Fi.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, I mean, that's an innovative solution and something that's needed everywhere. But I don't know how you've got through if there are any regulatory issues that you have to deal with in that space. I'm pretty sure they're probably somewhere buried somewhere. There's somebody that's going to ask some hard questions, and you go, but this is obvious.
Mm. But, you know, just to try and make it simpler for you know, your listeners. So now you've got all this infrastructure of Wi-Fi. Mm. We say, well, there's a software upgrade on your phone. You can make a call using Wi-Fi. But if you phone another network, you still have to pay a terminating rate. Okay? Yeah. So we're saying, well, the terminating rates are still too high. That's what we fought in 2012, 2013. Mm. Yeah. Bring those down, because if they come down, then the call over Wi-Fi should actually be cheaper than WhatsApp calling. So here's the regulator complaining about OTT, Vodacom, MTN, saying, you can't do this. All these OTT services, Skype, WhatsApp calling. Mm. And then, you know, they don't have a solution. We bring out a solution, and we say, well, the only thing stopping you from making a free Wi-Fi call on my network, because it's not my infrastructure. I've invested nothing on infrastructure. It's already there. Mm. You go to a coffee shop, and you have Wi-Fi calling. So I'm trying to bring the price of those Wi-Fi callings down to a bare minimum, but now I'm still limited through a regulatory process that I have to pay another network a terminating rate to terminate a call on their network. And I'm saying, but I'm not originating it from my infrastructure. I'm originating it from another Wi-Fi infrastructure points, similar to OTT. So interesting debate. Look, they can't stop you from doing it. They can just delay the mobile terminating rates from coming down. And there's a review starting in October. So that's going to be an interesting debate again.
Yeah.
Fascinating. So, I mean, you're out there fighting the fight. You believe in real empowerment. And then you raise the women empowerment, which is something you've brought about at Cell C, moving from like 30-40% women to 60%. What drives that?
Yeah, it started years ago when I was in Mozambique. You know, and when you travel rural areas and you see people living in subsistence farming, Adrian, it had nothing to do with telecommunications. It just saw us, I witnessed firsthand, you know, what our African women go through from a day to day, waking up in the morning, taking their kids to school, you know, going into the farm, you know, walking for a kilometer for a bucket of water to pour it over the vegetables that they're trying to grow. And the more I spoke to them, the bigger the tolerance, you know, I felt women had. And I said, well, how do we empower these women? Because the men were out, you know, going into the big cities looking for big jobs. They were out fishing. You know, they were the ones that were going out hunting. So the women had to really sit there and take control of this village and their environment. And I found, through my own way of dealing with them, their tolerance level was very, very, very high. So when we came back to South Africa, when I came back to South Africa, Cell C had really no empowerment of women, you know, in terms of what the drive was. And I made a promise to the team that we would change that. I started at about 42% of our staff were women. Today we're just over 60. At senior executive we have quite a few women. At middle management we have a lot of women. We have good-looking women, we have clever women, we have smart women, and that's created a different environment. Our call center in Cape Town, specifically in the Indian community, predominantly women, they are so passionate about solving customers' problems. They have a higher level of tolerance. And I think we need to empower these individuals, especially the female individuals, to sort of start taking control. You know, we no longer live in the society of, you know, the woman stays at home and she's got to look after the chores. Today, a lot of women are independent. They bring up their kids by themselves. They're financially stable. But somehow we failed as a nation to empower them. There's not too many women in leadership roles. And I'm hoping one day when I step down from Celsius that a woman will be the CEO of the company. And that's really what we're trying to do. Mm. And they just have a different way of managing. They have a different way of engaging in meetings, of engaging with bodies. It creates a different dynamic. I mean, if I can use the term on your radio station, you know, women do have a beat switch. And boy, if you see two women fighting, there's worse than two men having an argument.
Really?
Absolutely. But there's more positiveness, you know, that comes about by empowering women and really creating an environment where they excel, and that's what we do. You know,
you're involved with the Miss South Africa pageant somehow?
Yeah, look, we sponsor Miss South Africa. That's a great platform. I mean, a lot of people say, are you into a beauty pageant? Actually not. That was just a route to get to what I wanted to do. So at the end of the day, 12 young girls go into the finals, and one is the winner, and the other 11 wake up on the Monday morning, and they've got some kind of tertiary education, or they're in the process of finishing their tertiary education, but they're really young and lost in many cases, in the sense of they're not sure what they're going to do. So we offer all those young girls a job, an intern job for 12 months in the company. And over the last 3 years, I don't want to misquote, but we've had probably about 30-40% of the young girls have stayed in the company. I mean, we've seen some of the top engineers, female engineers, coming in and giving our seasoned engineers a go for a run for their money, you know, and said, no, but hold on, but why don't you do it this way? And this, it's just an amazing. I mean, we've just finished the Miss SA finalists, and we've got a couple of more young of these individuals who didn't make Miss South Africa joining the company. And it brought a whole different atmosphere to you. I mean, can you imagine? You've got 12 gorgeous women, and say four or five of them walk into your company. Do you know what it does to the atmosphere in that company? The men dress better. They shave every morning.
I mean, they're intelligent girls.
Absolutely.
You know, you don't get to the 12 finalists, I'm guessing, if you don't have a lot to offer.
All of these women are highly educated. Mm. And they just now get given an opportunity. I mean, some of the girls that are now permanently employed by us, they have every single one of those girls that have stayed with us now permanently. If you go and ask the, you know, senior executives that they report to, would you have it any other way? Absolutely not. These girls are dynamic, they're loyal, they're hardworking, they're smart, and they bring an aura to the organization that wasn't there before.
You know what, this might be a strange comment, but it's quite interesting. I would see a lot of businesses shying away from that. It could be an intimidating factor, because that could have a positive and negative effect on staff. Mm. But I mean, it's often a big burden when you're a beautiful woman,
yeah,
or when you're a very intelligent guy, or you know, when you have these incredible qualities as a human being, it's a burden. Yeah. And you're absorbing them into the business, but it's a cool business, it's a vibey business.
I wouldn't do it if I'm in a manufacturing environment.
I was going to just note, yeah, it was beautiful women and intelligent men. I notice guys can't be good looking.
but you know, what people don't understand, our industry is a young, vibrant industry. If you look the next 3 years, you know, the whole industry will have been changed. Mm. It's all about social media. It's all about applications. It's all about data. You know, we're starting a new hub, a new division in the company. We call it the Digital Play. You know that we're securing premises outside the company. I was saying to my senior executives the other day, you guys are too old. You want to understand where the future is going. So I'm bringing all these young people, these dynamic, good-looking, young, educated, you know, open-minded. And I said, I'm going to put them somewhere else. I said, but we've got so much space in the campus. I said, they'll die here. I said, we've got to put them in their own space where they can think. These people come to work in a skateboard. You know, they got their iPod connected to their ears. They got their Facebook, their Instagram. That's how they communicate. We don't do that. So it's, you need this young energy. And, you know, companies today have lost that. You know, you bring all these young people. I read somewhere not long ago, I think it was Steve Jobs, please correct me if I'm wrong, but he says, we employ all these young, smart people, and then we tell them, to keep quiet. Mm. You know, so if you're bringing all these young people, let them sort of be open-minded and give them the space for them to excel.
Got to be able to speak up. Yeah. Do we have any comments? I mean, lots of interesting angles. It's not just a a normal business. This so much stems from the top, doesn't it? You know, your mindset, Jose, your attitude. Any comments?
Well, our experience, Jose, is that the mindset of the person at the top does have a dramatic effect. Even speaking more global level, if Zuma can persuade the people to have confidence in it, has a tremendous cascading impact. So I love that. I just want to mention that in the situation you sketch here, we find more and more reason that the people grow technologically, and of course in terms of social media dramatically, but the leadership component is something that we focus on. In other words, you must still put in practice, still apply the attitude you portray to make it work, or else technology becomes a negative. So the leadership angle is something that technology sometimes forget.
Before we run out of time, before you give us your feeling about where the industry is going, you met the founder of Facebook. How did that happen? In Europe, you had a meal with him. Just tell us about why it happened, and what was the takeaway? One or two takeaways there, because he's shaping the globe.
Yeah. So through our involvement with Facebook and WhatsApp, you know, we've embraced OTT players. We see that as a big future. You're either on that same boat with these guys, or you're going to fall off that boat very, very soon. So I got an invitation to say, look, I'm going to be in Europe. Why don't you and a few others join us for dinner? So I was quite fortunate to, you know, have the best part of three and a half hours with such a young, dynamic guy. So the first thing I learned was I'm getting damn old for this industry. The second thing is this guy and his team, they are really the true innovators. They have stopped at nothing. They keep reinventing themselves. I mean, think about it this way. They have 2 billion customers on Facebook. No one gets a bill. Okay, and they make billions of dollars in revenues. They bought WhatsApp for what? 20-odd billion dollars. They got over a billion users, and they employ 200 people. I mean, this is what he told me himself. He said, no, I think we employ about 200 people in WhatsApp. So really,
and he doesn't know where they sit.
Yeah, problem.
where are they?
It's unbelievable. And when you sit with somebody like Mark, who's so visionary, so dynamic, and what he's trying to do with Facebook and where Facebook is going, and you know, he's getting all these challenges in certain countries, like in India, in certain North African countries, where you can't offer WhatsApp and you can't have free Facebook, and you know, all these facilities and services that he offers. And most viewerships, most listeners will probably be aware, you know, they're putting up their own satellite. I think it's in August or September. So I had a long chat with him. So they're saying, well, you know what, if the regulators don't want to play party and the operators don't want to play party, we'll start putting our own satellites and you'll get free access to internet. So you'll have your device, you'll see an icon and you say you're connected to Facebook's free internet service. And now you still, you know, search the Facebook. And if you look at the trends and the video streaming, you know, you'll probably have, his vision is, you know, 3-4 years from now to have 4.5 billion users on Facebook, with the planet's population of 7 billion. So if you take the under 8-year-olds, under 9, you know, you start looking at huge penetration.
So they're taking on the establishment, aren't they? Are they doing it head on, or is it just, listen, this is all we can do. If governments don't play along, or regulators, we just pave our own path.
I don't think it's intentional at all. I think these guys wake up in the morning and they've got a clear path of where they're going. They've got a clear path of what the customer wants. Mm. And people like you and I, we glued onto our handsets. You know, we're always on Facebook, Instagram, Skype. And Facebook is becoming a platform where, personally, if somebody said to me, what do you think about, you know, Facebook and YouTube? I think Facebook will have more video streaming in the next 2-3 years than YouTube will have. Mm-hmm. Okay?
Yeah, obviously.
So, and what they do is they have the ability to listen to what customers want across this globe. So whether it's an Indian culture, whether it's, you know, a Chinese culture, whether it's a South African culture, these guys have just got an amazing dynamic team. You know, when I talk to the Facebook team, these guys are on top of the game. They're dynamic. Nothing's too difficult. If you throw an idea that is so wild out there, they say, wow, why don't we try that? You know, and it comes back to your development. I was saying to you, and I don't want to forget this point, Adrian. You talk to a guy like Mark Zuckerberg, he'll listen to you and says, geez, this is a good idea. Why don't we have a look at it? Today in South Africa, when you talk about transformation in leadership, how many young people go to their supervisors, their managers, and give them an idea? And it never goes further than that.
We're going to pay a price for that. We will pay a price for that.
And this is the difference. So when I look at those leadership skills of a young guy, who everybody around him is older than him by quite a long way, and he's just listening. And, you know, you'll adapt to ideas, you'll look at them, you'll research them, and no idea goes unturned. And we said, yeah, and I got a lot of friends in South Africa that I engage with, and I said, but you, what do you do when a young guy walks into your office and says, I want to try this, I want to do that? You know, you just take it and you throw that email into the bin, probably nine times out of ten. Mm-hmm. And that's part of our transformation process. You know, we live in a society where most people don't want their jobs to be taken away. So they protect them as opposed to making sure that they only have people around them that are cleverer than them. Mm. So when somebody goes into a manager's office and says, I got an idea, if it wasn't invented by him, chances it'll never filter up the line. It's a huge problem. But
just say to Santos, it's just well done on bringing Celsi into this game. It's a high-pressure, fast-moving, innovative, crazy game that you find yourselves in the middle of. Just 1 minute on where is your industry going? I mean, you touched on some of it here and there, obviously, but where is it going in the next 2 to 5 years? It seems to be compounding.
Yeah.
Escalating fast. I mean, this is just it's data, it's information, it's just content. Where are we going?
So this is my view of the world in South Africa. One thing's for sure, you know, you're going into a major data-centric environment. By that I mean people haven't stopped talking. They're just using data networks to talk. And I've given examples, Wi-Fi calling, WhatsApp calling. So they'll use the data network to make a call. It's not as if they haven't stopped talking. Mm. But the information overload will probably quadruple, if not more than that, in the next 3-4 years. That means you'll want better data networks with better download speeds. You will consume more data. I mean, in the United States, if my memory serves me right, out of a month, there's 720 hours in a month on a 30-day month. 480 hours of those months, people used to stream information. Okay, just to give you. And people can do that if you've got high-speed data networks. So in this country, you'll see huge data networks being built with high-speed. You're seeing us launching in 2-3 weeks' time, LTE Advanced. So basically, you'll get 100 megabits download speed now on a mobile device. That means you'll get a 3D or HD movie, which would have taken you 2.5 hours to download, around 15 to 20 minutes to download the same movie. That just puts it in context. And this is where it's going. The social content of society will become much more complex because people will be talking and engaging only on the social media, much more active than what we've seen today. And you're saying, but they do that already. This is going to increase. Mm. It's going to even get more involved. Companies, I think, advertising, a classic thing that is happening. I think billboards will become something of the past. I think TV will become less and less. Radio will still maintain that because it's a great form of medium specific for us into rural areas in terms of engagement.
Also when you drive, I mean, then what can you do? Yeah.
Correct. Okay. But social advertising communication will be something that will be generating millions and millions of rands worth of revenues like we see in more developed countries like the States and in Europe. Mm. And it's just going to be one massive, data-centric approach. You'll have networks that build good networks. And you'll have networks that will say we have to play in the content digital space and creating content that keeps you as a consumer engaged with your provider.
Mm. So it's all about the content.
Yeah.
It's all about the content. So just say I'm going to end off with a Sibanye executive team thought. So at the end of the show, just a leadership thought. But do you have a final message to leaders out there? An essence message, few seconds. What would you say if all the leaders in South Africa were listening to you right now?
Look, over my life, I've gone through different economic turmoils, and it's a product life cycle, your life. Where we're going through today in terms of our country and specifically our different industries, what I'd say to leaderships is you just need to be more hands-on and more engaged. People really need to understand, doesn't matter if you're in the business of making soap or in the business of selling cell phones, you really need to engage consumers. Consumers are becoming highly educated, highly informative. They've got access to information quicker than your research department. And you need to start paying attention very attentively to what your customers are saying and to your staff. And let your staff grow. Let them make mistakes. People aren't allowing staff to make mistakes and saying, well, we learn through it. And really engaging and creating some fun, in these organizations. We become far too structured in our corporate society. Yeah. That's basically what I would have to say to him.
Excellent advice to CEOs there from someone who's pushing the boundaries. Thank you, José dos Santos, for joining us today. The hour went too damn fast. Just a final comment, Louis, and then Richard, like 10 seconds. Anything you want to think the leader should take away?
No, thanks. José, I suggest any leader just carefully consider the content of the last hour. Thank you, José.
Thank you. Thanks, Adrian.
Yeah, I think it's very clear that leadership starts from the top, and I think you've made a fundamental change in the organization in CELSI.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank
and
you.
That's spreading to the industry, isn't it? Mm. All right, quick Sibanye executive thought. Never, and I put this in bold letters in my tweet, never underestimate the speed at which negative information travels in 2016. Chances are you do. And I put hashtag politicians. For any political party or any politician to think that they're safe in today's world, when there's negativity floating around, don't underestimate. You'll wake up and it will be over. And that goes for CEOs, it goes for any leader. The world is so connected, you cannot sleep on this one. That's it, the Leadership Transformation Platform, our Leadership Masterclass, the last hour. Next up, our Business Masterclass. Very interesting conversations. It's all going to be about self-knowledge, self-worth, self-confidence. Then the second half, we have back in the studio someone who was here before. She's going to teach our leaders or our SME owners, Claire O'Keefe from Gajima, how to pitch their small business. But next up, Colleen Lightbody from USB Ed. And it's interpersonal stuff, self-worth, self-confidence. Stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.